Judge Bauer and I are very pleased to have Judge Pallmeyer of the District Court, Northern District of Illinois, sitting with us, help us with our caseload, even though she has a heavier caseload in the District Court. So our first case for argument, Vandenbosch versus Ramish. Mr. Wilkins.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the Court, Scott Wilkins appearing as court-appointed amicus counsel to argue the side of the pro se plaintiff's appellants in these appeals. These appeals challenge the power of prison officials to censor criticism of their own conduct. That's political speech at the core of the First Amendment. The Wisconsin Department of Corrections claims the power to censor any incoming mail that may encourage hopelessness, disrespect, or distrust among inmates. That asserted authority would allow them to silence any criticism.
What would you suggest would be the right standard?
I think, Your Honor, the correct standard is set forth in Turner and Thornburg.
I want your view.
There has to be a genuine...
four factors either, something cleaner.
That there has to be a genuine threat to security and or rehabilitation at the prison, and that the extremely tenuous claims made in the
I want your standard.
Your Honor, I think that is the
standard I would propose.
That there has to be that when the prison officials look at the incoming mail and review it, that they have to come to the conclusion that there is an intolerable risk.
Okay, intolerable risk. What if the new abolitionist? What are they abolishing, by the way?
Well, they're seeking to reform.
Abolitionist. That has a historical meaning.
Something like Tea Party, but don't pay any attention.
So what is it they want to abolish?
I think the key thing they want to abolish, Your
Honor. Question: What does they want to abolish?
The current.
They want to abolish the prison system.
Well,
okay.
That the conditions of confinement in the current prison system,
they want
which
to abolish
are
the current prison system, they might condone a new prison system.
They want to reform the current system, Your Honor.
They want to abolish the present system and replace it with something else.
Well, they want to ameliorate.
What does abolition mean?
They want to ameliorate the conditions.
But the word abolition is not a synonym for ameliorate.
Well, Your Honor, I think it can mean to get rid of the conditions
that they're complaining of. Abolition is abolition. It's a very unambiguous word. So I'm just curious I thought you said they want to abolish the current prison system, which is fine.
I think what they want to do is reform the conditions.
Why do they call it reform? Why don't they call it reform if they don't want to abolish anything?
Your Honor, I think
I can intrude with a question, with your permission, sir.
Of course.
Did you confer with your client as to what he meant by abolish, by the abolition movement?
Your Honor, we haven't.
So that you don't know what he had in mind at all.
Well, the abolitionist writers, they have described this.
Well, I want to lay him out.
Yeah, I think the reviewing the newsletter and the arguments made in the various articles in the newsletter, the point is to do away with the conditions of confinement that are being complained of as being egregious in the newsletter. So it's not to abolish an entire system; it is to change it by getting rid of, which I think the term abolish could also apply to, getting rid of the egregious conditions that are being complained of over and over again in the various articles, and to seek reform of the system by encouraging inmates to work with family, friends, supporters outside the prison to try to bring about change. That's the recurring theme in the newsletter, and I think Judge Crabb found that to be the case in the Johnson decision, where she looked at the newsletter in detail.
The authors describe the mission as, quote, the abolition of prisons. More than that, we seek the abolition of the systems of oppression that create the need for prisons. We seek the abolition of police, who are enforcers of the systems of oppression that create the need for prisons. We seek the abolition of capitalism as a system that divides us, destroys our environment, and commodifies all things.
That gets rid of federal judges, so you know.
In terms of the material that the Wisconsin Department of Corrections found problematic in the newsletter, they pointed to four different articles. And they pointed to articles that, if upon review, are clearly aimed at trying to reform the system. They're not there may be an overarching goal of the editor of the newsletter, but the purpose of the articles and the purpose of the newsletter as a whole, if upon review, is to bring about reform. And there's a realization throughout the articles of the newsletter that this is the system. And the prison system exists, and we have to try to change it through political means.
If your standard of intolerable risk is wrong, then do you lose?
Your Honor, it depends on what the other standard is. I think that's the standard articulated by the Supreme Court. And so that clearly, I mean, in Thornburg.
Intolerable risk?
Yes, they do, Your Honor. In Thornburg and in Turner versus Safley, they use the word intolerable risk to security and or rehabilitation.
So what about just insulting the guards? What if it says the guards are a bunch of fatsos?
I think those
faggots or something. What about that?
Is that
censorable? Or
I
no?
think that, Your Honor, I think that is censorable. I think
that doesn't create intolerable risk, surely.
Well, I think there's a distinction between. I think that certainly those kinds of comments can create a risk.
What about
of
calling the warden a murderer? That doesn't create a risk? You call him a fatso.
Well,
you call him a murderer. I mean, that's what the abolitionist says, right? Or am I confusing
well,
there, him?
Well, there's, I think the
Which is the one that says that he's trying to get around the fact that Wisconsin doesn't have a death penalty by driving these people to suicide?
Well, this is
that your client? Is that the new abolitionist?
Well, that is that's the second of the two appeals, the Jones L case, and it's an article about prison suicides.
Calling the warden a murderer doesn't create intolerable risk, but insulting him personally would?
Your Honor, I don't think it creates an intolerable risk.
Isn't calling someone a murderer worse than calling him overweight?
It's a criticism of his. It's a criticism of his official duties, and I think that's
that. But why doesn't that create intolerable risk if the prisoners think that the warden is trying to kill them? Doesn't that inflame them?
I think the article, Your Honor, is a little bit more nuanced than making that direct claim.
You think the readership here is alert to nuance?
Well, I think the
these sophisticated readers, and they say, "Oh, well, you know, it's not."
Well, Your Honor, as
murder in a literal sense, but in this nuanced sense, of, right?
Your Honor, as Judge Crabb noted, that those statements in the article about the conditions of confinement being equivalent to or essentially causing death in certain cases.
Well,
was made.
So it's the accusation of a conspiracy. It's not an accident. It's not that. The warden doesn't realize that solitary confinement leads to suicide. He's doing it deliberately to get around the absence of a death penalty. That's what it says.
I don't think that's
a nuance there.
That's not my reading of the article. I think it's the failure to change the system.
Pardon?
It's the failure to change the system.
Didn't say the prison officials are deliberately using solitary confinement to drive people to suicide?
Well, I think that the article is saying that people are being kept in solitary confinement under certain conditions, which is causing.
It's not deliberate.
Well, Your Honor, whether or not one can read it that way, I think it's very much a legitimate.
You can read it that way.
Criticism.
Is there any other way to read it?
I think one way to read it, Your Honor, is that people are being kept in confinement, and that is causing, in some cases, them to.
Deliberate. It's deliberate. They're trying to get around the absence of a death penalty.
And there's no indication, Your Honor, that creates an intolerable risk of a threat to.
Calling them a fatso would.
Well, I think though that there are cases that distinguish between, in this court's cases, distinguish between. So insolence and gratuitous name-calling that's not linked to criticizing one's official conduct. And I think here you have.
Why does gratuitous name-calling, personal insults, why does that create an intolerable risk?
Well, the cases that deal with that don't actually make that express determination, but they take the view that insolence without being linked to some kind of official criticism of official duty is incompatible with the with being confined and the structure of the authority structure within the prison.
So call here, pointing out error problems in the system itself and the way it's being run is appropriate.
That's at the
but making attacks on the character or the size or the other personality defects of any employees are not.
Yes, Your Honor. I mean, this is at the core of political speech. To criticize how the prison administration is performing their duties is at the core of political speech, and it's critically important that inmates be able to communicate back and forth with the broader society about their confinement, including conditions that may lead some of them to commit suicide, and including the critiques made in the March 2007 newsletter, which point to problems in the parole process, problems in the conditions of confinement. Those are critically important issues for society to be aware of and to be able to work together with inmates to bring about change.
Suppose the prison made a judgment that this kind of new abolitionist or Jones L. Articles are actually, you know, causing a turmoil in the prison, making it more difficult to get these prisoners to take seriously the fact that they are criminals and reform and so on. Would that finding not be entitled to any weight? Or?
Well, Your Honor, I think it depends on what the finding actually says. If as in the case of the Westfield affidavit.
And who made the finding would be important.
That would be important. But in the case of the Westfield affidavit, you have extremely attenuated conclusory statements about what might occur. There's nothing in the affidavit or anything in the record to suggest any turmoil that actually has occurred or any tensions that are referred to. It's these statements are over and over again extremely conclusory and attenuated. So there's no way to know whether there's any genuine risk on the ground. And if the kinds of statements that are made in the Westfield affidavit were sufficient to justify the censorship of this kind of political and social commentary about prisons, then anything could be censored. Any criticism at all of the Department of Corrections could be censored.
Censorship. We're just talking about censorship within the prison itself. There's no question of their being able to foreclose outside criticism.
Well, Your Honor, I think the key point here
Isn't they're not trying to censor, you know, newspapers.
They are censoring the back and forth communication that's essential.
The back and forth communication among prisoners, is this a major contribution to the marketplace and ideas?
Yes, Your Honor, it is a major contribution.
We've all seen this. What the psychology of criminals is that they may acknowledge their crimes, but they immediately change the subject to all the, you know, wrongs that have been done to them by their lawyers, the prosecutors, the judges, the prisons, right? So is it really healthy for the prisoners to be preoccupied with their grievances against the prison rather than thinking about their criminality and that it might be good to reform?
Well, unfortunately, Your Honor, as
prison decides or penal authorities or sociologists decide, it's very unhealthy for prisoners to be constantly agitating about prison conditions, that it's bad for them. What weight would that get in a
Your Honor, I think it should get.
Case.
Your Honor, I think it should get very little weight because there is a natural tendency, particularly I think in the prison setting, to censor criticism.
Sociologists made a study and found that it inhibited rehabilitation for prisoners to be constantly agitating about prison conditions. Suppose that was, you know, that's not the prison. Suppose that just was the finding of impartial academics. What weight would that be entitled to?
That may be entitled to some weight, Your Honor. I think, though,
What do academics know about the prison situation? Anybody else?
Well, it really depends on what the study says and what you know, what specifically they've looked at. I think the critically important point here is we know from case after case.
Well, what if they did a controlled experiment, you know, and found that prisoners who were in environments where they were not permitted to circulate, you know, read the New Abolitionist, had lower recidivism rates than other prisoners?
I think it's hard to gauge.
It's an abstract question. Suppose there were this literature on the harms of prisoner free speech. What weight would that get in a First Amendment analysis?
I think the courts would still need to be very vigilant that because of the abuses.
That's hedging. I'm assuming these are authoritative studies. Their accuracy is accepted. And then the question is, a matter of law, what weight, if any, would they be entitled to, in your view?
Well, depending on what the studies say, Your Honor, I think they could be entitled to some weight. It's hard to answer that without seeing them and being able to look at what the basis is for their conclusions.
I don't want to answer my question. That's okay.
Would you be more comfortable with that empirical kind of a study than you are with Mr. Westfield's affidavit as support for the arguable censorship in this case?
Well, I think it depends on how grounded in fact it is, which I don't think the Westfield affidavit is, and I think the critical point here is that we know from case after case, including cases in this court, that there are abuses committed against prisoners all of the time.
Yes, and they sue all the time. It's not that prisoners are not barred from communicating their concerns to the world, not just to the courts, but no one is saying they can be prevented from filing public complaints.
Yes, Your Honor, but the
why do they have to be complaining to each other?
Well, and the important thing is that
they're in the military all the time. You know, they used to talk. Every soldier that break was truly a soldier.
But
beefed about everything.
But I think the critically important thing is that they be able to communicate with society.
Society is the 308 million people aren't in prison. They can communicate all they want to those people. Why do they have to be able to communicate freely to each other and, you know, whip them up and get them very upset and angry?
Well, it's part of the back and forth communication that it go outward to society and then come back into the prisons.
There's a difference between communicating to a fellow prisoner and communicating to the outside world. There's no inhibition against their communicating with the outside world. Why isn't that enough?
Your Honor, there is an inhibition in this very case because the incoming mail is being censored. So the communication from society back to the prisoners is being prevented, and that is what is inhibiting the back and forth communication.
They're abolitionists, but they have access. They can read newspapers, can't they? I mean, aren't they allowed to read newspapers?
They may be allowed to read in prison, whatever's allowed into the prison library. I think they are. I think at least some prisoners are allowed to read the newspaper.
I don't understand. Are some prisoners forbidden to read a newspaper?
I think it depends on what kind of, if they're under certain kinds of restrictions, they may be. I can't speak for all of the prisoners in the Wisconsin prison system. And I'd like to reserve the rest for rebuttal, Your Honor.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Wilkins. Ms. Peacock? Go ahead, Ms. Peacock.
May it please the Court. I am Ann Peacock, an Assistant Attorney General with the State of Wisconsin, and I represent all of the defendants' appellees in this consolidated appeal from two district court cases. All of the defendants' appellees are employees of the Wisconsin Department of Corrections for the state. They, in this case, made appropriate decisions because they have appropriate discretion.
So what do you think is the correct standard for these First Amendment challenges?
The correct standard is whether a prison action is reasonably related to a legitimate government interest. The exact standard set forth in Turner.
What's a legitimate government interest in this case?
The legitimate government interests in this case are risks to security and rehabilitation.
How so?
The articles in this case, in the both the Abolitionist newsletter and the Jones L article, both had risks to rehabilitation because they contained falsehoods.
Wait, you mean if what is told is a lie, then we can strike it? who determines whether it's a falsehood or not?
In this case, Security Chief Daniel Westfield, who is the security chief for the entire Department of Corrections system.
Yeah, I understand he's a very big guy, but it's his decision as to whether it's a lie or not that's important.
Yes, and
so
that's...
So if I say he's inept and he says it's a lie, he can keep that from being publicized amongst the prisoners.
In this case, there were particular
My question was very specifically, if he determines, if I say he's inept, that's a lie, that he can keep me from telling other prisoners about that.
Well, in that case, it depends upon if it goes...
No, just yes or no. See, I learned this from my brother Poster. Yes or no?
Yes, I believe in some instances that...
If a prisoner says that something that this guy who decides who's telling the truth and who's telling a lie is inept, and he thinks it's a lie, you can preclude him from talking about it.
Yes, if in fact they're talking about is a lie. In this particular case, there were four articles in the newsletter that did contain falsehoods. The first one, the WSPF had no work or no school, according to the abolitionist. However, DOC did have work and school programming.
Couldn't they publicize that to the prisoners? That is the idea of the First Amendment, is a free exchange of ideas. If somebody does something that's false, the answer is to tell them the truth, not to stop them from talking about being false. So all they have to do is send another letter saying that's a lot of baloney, that we have all these things and we're doing the best we can.
Your Honor, respectfully, Turner does not require a prison to do that. This is not a least restrictive means test.
I said the First Amendment might suggest, however, that free exchange of ideas is what we're all about. And if I think you're inept and you can point out that you're not inept, we've made the point. Either they believe you or they believe me. That's all.
Prisons would be at a gridlock if they had to counterpoint every point made in these newsletters.
Prisons or any would be? You mean the institution itself would be have to lock down to refute a lie?
Not at lockdown, but if each instance we had to review what was...
If I'm saying if there's something that is a lie, and that's the predicate you had, they can respond by pointing out that it's a lie, and that doesn't take any time at all.
It does take time because it would have to have the position of DOC go out to all of the inmates in written form. That takes lots of personnel time and resources. One instance may not take a lot of time and personnel resources, but they all stack up.
It takes them a little time to read and decide what's a lie to begin with. It seems to me once you've done that, all you have to do is say this is a lie for this reason.
Then they would have to put that in paper form and have that disseminated to all of the inmates.
They don't disseminate paper in the prisons?
They do.
Do they have rules that they disseminate amongst the prisoners?
They do have rules that they disseminate. Yes, they do.
So but it's a regular distribution for the administration of the prisoners going on anyway.
Correct. But
now what's wrong with adding to it the fact that you point out that a lie is being disseminated?
Because it is going to take a lot of personnel and time resources to put in a paper to convince the prisoners on why it's a lie.
Well, you'd have to convince them. You're just trying to point out that it's a lie. Whether they accept it or not is up to them.
I don't believe that the prisoners would take at face value a communication from the Department of Corrections.
I don't think they believe the Department of Corrections altogether. That's probably true, but that's not the fault of the disseminator of what is viewed as termed a lie.
Well, if the dissemination is false and the corrections puts it's a lie, period, then there's a problem. If the inmates don't believe them because they haven't taken the time to go through all the empirical evidence or any other evidence,
the possibility that somebody might make a decision you don't like is the important part of it. That they've decided that it is not a lie, that's the part you're worried about.
Well, if the inmates aren't given enough information to show why it's not a lie, then they will believe the lie, and that will have negative impacts.
You mean, so the difficulty of proving a lie is what you're talking about? That gives you the right to dissent and stop the speech altogether. Then you don't have to refute it.
Turner gives us the right to stop the speech altogether. Turner says that you do not have to take steps that are burdensome. In this case, they are burdensome.
I'm just trying to figure out how burdensome it is.
In this case, Daniel Westfield, the security chief, would be tasked with looking through anything that had a lie in it that was going to prisons.
He does that anyway, just to kill it.
He does look through for the lies, but then he would have to explain in paper format why it's a lie, go through all of the details.
You think that's an oppressive burden on the prison?
Yes.
I don't know why you're emphasizing lying. I don't think lying is the issue in this case.
Well, we do have...
stirring up the prisoners by calling the warden a murderer.
We do have both, lies and stirring up.
That's more serious than a lie.
Well, there are the four articles in The Abolitionist, one of which was this purported lie about no work or no school at the WSPF, which would discourage prisoners from seeking a transfer. I mean, would they have that authority anyway?
Yes. When the WSPF, after the settlement in another Jones L case, went through some changes, at that point, they needed people to volunteer to transfer to WSPF. And they were asking for volunteers. So the first page of this newsletter says, don't be a volunteer. They don't have school. They don't have work. Now, if an inmate is at another correctional institution where the school programs and the work programs are full and they don't transfer to WSPF because there's something out there that says there's no school and no work, that is bad for their rehabilitation. Their rehabilitation would say those programs are beneficial. If WSPF has them, they should go there and participate in them. And this newsletter didn't do that. And, Your Honor, your point about stirring up the pot, that is really important in this case. This is a pot ready to boil over at any minute. Prisons are dangerous places, and stirring up the pot, angering inmates to their guards, to other inmates, is not appropriate. We have here, if there's nothing else I say to you, two points that I'd like to. First, the DOC denials of the mail meet the Turner standard. The Turner standard does not require DOC to narrow the discretion it is afforded under Turner. Secondly, the affidavits of Westfield in both cases were sufficient to sustain summary judgment for the defendants in both of cases. Now, the affidavits that opposing counsel talked about, he said that they were conclusory, that they had speculation. He said that there should be, and I want to quote here, established turmoil has occurred. That's not the standard. Turner and Thornburg both say that's not the standard. We don't have to wait for the pot to boil over. We can take preventive action. And in this case, that's exactly what we've done. And we need the deference in order to do that. And this deference and the discretion is working. Turner, as it is working. How do we see that? Because the New Abolitionist newsletter is looked at issue by issue by the top security chief. And some of these newsletters have come into the prisons. This one has not. But the fact that some have come in means that we're not quelling all criticism of prisons. We are taking a specific look at every article and every newsletter from the New Abolitionist to make sure that there aren't security and rehabilitation risks. And when there are those risks, then we are preventing the dissemination to inmates. We are not preventing wholesale dissemination of this newsletter. And so we are using our discretion appropriately. And we need to keep that discretion because the prisons are the best places to make those judgment calls, especially when there are different things in these newsletters. Unfortunately, I don't think that the court will be able to come up with a standard that gives kind of a bright line rule interpreting Turner. These are too specific of fact situations to do anything more than Turner says. Turner says there needs to be discretion, there needs to be a reasonable relationship between the government action and the legitimate objective, and here there is. There is, based upon the Westfield affidavit. This court in January of 2010 in the Singer case said a security expert's affidavit is enough. You don't need to show that there's 100% going to be a problem between what you've identified as a risk and a legitimate objective. You do not need to show proof. Singer quoted Turner in that. Thornburg also says that. Established turmoil is not the standard. The Supreme Court doesn't allow us to adopt that as the standard. I want to go to a couple other points that opposing counsel mentioned. He also said that his standard would be that there was a genuine threat to rehabilitation and security a genuine threat to rehabilitation and security. Essentially, he's putting the word genuine into the standard that already exists. Genuine, to me, means that we now have to prove the threat. That adjective, adding to the word threat to rehabilitation and security, adding the word genuine means we have to prove the threat. But again, Singer, Thornburg, and Turner all say that that is not a requirement, nor should it be. And empirical studies aren't necessary either for the reasons I've outlined. In fact, Judge Griesbach in the Jones-Al decision said this area of prison administration is not very easy to use empirical studies with because it discusses will of the people. The Amicus Council has discussed all of the things that maybe could happen but haven't happened. We don't know that things haven't happened. This newsletter is now available in the prisons because of Judge Krabs-Johnson decision. This newsletter could have effects that we just don't know about. Did somebody read it and say, no jobs, no school at WSPF, I'm not going, and they didn't get programming? That would have affected their rehabilitation, but we don't have those statistics, nor could we really have those statistics. It would take a lot of time and resources to gather those types of statistics. Prisons aren't required to do so. They are working on limited budgets and limited resources as it is. Their main thing is making sure that prisons are secure. They're doing that by making these day-to-day decisions on a case-by-case basis and making sure what comes in the prison isn't going to be risking the rehabilitation and security of both the inmates and the guards. There's a lot at risk here in taking away discretion. Discretion is a necessary part of corrections. I'd like to turn to the Jones-L article and why that in particular, the denial of that meets the Turner standard. In that case, the article says that segregation denies inmates food, clothing, running water, all false things, that if inmates do believe those things, that may cause them to band together, revolt, cause a riot.
It seems to me to cause them not to do any problems and get them involved in such a punishment.
Well, according to the article, they can't prevent getting to segregation.
Well,
because...
According to the article, they just get willy-nilly pulled out and put in segregation.
Right. Yes, Your Honor. And so that is going to create hopelessness in the face of inmates that no matter what I do, if I do good, if I do bad, if my behavior is good or bad in the prison, I will go to segregation. And segregation doesn't have food, it doesn't have clothing, it doesn't have water. And segregation, you know, if I have my pants on backwards, I'll go to segregation. If I do this, I'll go to segregation.
In reference to clothing, they're naked in segregation?
Your Honor, I believe in some points in some prisons, when they're first taken to segregation, they are naked for a very short period of time to do searches and that kind of a thing. But they are generally given clothing in segregation.
Generally strikes me as being seldom. Go ahead.
Most of the people that do go to segregation and have been disciplined in the prison, for instance, for 360 days or 180 days, they're clothed the entire time. It's just the short period when they get to segregation that they may not be clothed for a short period of time.
For aesthetic purposes and nothing else.
I'm sorry, I didn't hear that question.
For aesthetic purposes, for the benefit of the guards, as opposed to the prisoner.
Yes. Clothing is usually a good thing. It also questions the legitimacy of all of the decisions that the prisoners, that the prison officials have made to put people in segregation, and have essentially said you have no power to determine whether you are going to segregation or not, when inmates do have power. The Jones-L article also says that now
is it difficult for the prison authorities to tell them you do have power? That you don't do anything wrong, you don't go to segregation, you have to break one of the rules, it'd be a rather severe rule before you go to segregation.
Again, the prisoners can say that,
yeah.
But they would need to put together a book in order to convince the inmates of that.
But the suggestion by these people that this is not true, that goes immediately and they believe it, this gospel?
Jones L. has...
We've got to start giving you a better class of prisoners. I mean, apparently...
Jones L. has institutional credibility with these prisoners.
Yeah.
He was the main plaintiff in a major case,
and he won.
And he won. Yeah. So he has major credibility. And for him to say, this is going on, and Wisconsin DOC to say, nope, it's not going on, that won't be enough to convince them. In order to DOC to convince the prisoners that it's not going on, they would have to put together a book, something they're not required to do, nor do they have the time to do. And, in fact, there isn't the segregation problems that Jones L. is saying. And it's those false problems, in addition to the warden's a murderer. Excuse me?
That wouldn't take a book. All you need is a couple of people saying it. No, I was in segregation, and it wasn't like that at all.
Well, whether the prisoners would believe that and whether they would think that they were playing the hand of the DOC, there's so many...
So many ifs.
So many things going on.
Democratic society is so unsure.
But a prison is not a democratic society.
Indeed,
nor
it's
should
not.
It be.
Indeed, it's not. But there's also a rule saying prisoners do not give their constitutional rights up entirely when they get sentenced to prison.
That is correct.
They're still covered by the Constitution.
Yes, they are still covered by the Constitution. They can send whatever they want to out of the prisons, criticizing prison officials, criticizing segregation. But when it comes to inmate-to-inmate correspondence, which essentially what the newsletter is, the New Abolitionist is by a non-inmate, but it contains articles written by inmates. That's inmate-to-inmate correspondence. In Turner, the court said you could ban entirely inmate-to-inmate correspondence from one institution to another. So clearly... Inmate-to-inmate correspondence does not have the same protections that things going outside the prison do. Things going outside of the prison, no problem. Jones L., this article, he can send it to the media himself. He doesn't need somebody else to send it to the media. He doesn't need the article itself going out to all of the inmates in the prison. If this article is based in fact, he sent it to a newspaper, and the newspaper looked at the facts, one would think that the newspaper would probably publish it. But they didn't. There's no indication that any news source that's reputable published his article, even though he has a reputation for giving prisoners rights and making sure that those rights are taken care of. The problem here is prisoners in segregation have the rights, and he is telling them that they do not.
They can talk amongst themselves, can't they?
They can talk amongst themselves, but it's a
prohibition against anybody beefing to another prisoner about conditions or spreading this sort of story?
It depends upon the situation. There are some prohibitions within the prison of an inmate saying to another inmate false information in front of other inmates and a guard trying to incite them.
No. Supposing there's no prohibition, there's no way to regulate conversations between prisoners.
I think as a whole that is correct, but there are going to be some situations where guards are within earshot, and if what is being said is problematic, then obviously we can take disciplinary action if they're trying to start a riot.
Put them in segregation, do we then?
Excuse me?
Put them in segregation then when they say
it depends upon what they are trying to do. If they're trying to incite a riot, yes, segregation is appropriate for them.
Jones L. would always be free to start a rumor about the conditions at WSPF. What you're suggesting that it somehow carries more credibility when he's got it in some kind of a newsletter or article that he's circulating within the prison.
Yes, Your Honor. I see that my time is up.
Okay. Thank you, Ms. Peacock. Mr. Wilkins?
Thank you, Your Honor. A couple of points in rebuttal. First, on the issue of falsehoods and the
intolerable risk as part of the Supreme Court standard in Turner. I didn't see that.
Those words are quoted in certainly quoted in the Thornburg case, Your Honor, and I can direct the court to that after argument if that would be helpful.
Would you quarrel with this as a standard when a prison regulation impinges on inmates' constitutional rights? The regulation is valid if it is, what is the phrase, reasonably related to legitimate penological interests. Is that a proper standard?
I think that's a proper standard, Your Honor, as long as it incorporates the neutrality.
Is that the equivalent of intolerable risk?
Well, I think it has to incorporate the notion of intolerable risk because that's what the Supreme Court has said, and I think that...
Well, no, no, it's never said that it incorporates the standard of intolerable risk.
Well, the
never said that.
In the Thornburg...
This is the Turner standard. This is a rational basis standard. This is not a First Amendment type of standard. This is reasonably related. You know, that's like what they apply to regulations of commerce or something like that. Reasonably related to legitimate penological interests. Well, legitimate penological interest is fostering rehabilitation, creating peaceful conditions in a prison, avoiding violence and misery to the extent feasible. And all you have to show, according to Turner, is a reasonable relation between what the prison does and these interests.
Well, there has to be content.
If we agree that that's the standard, then we can argue about its application to the facts of this case.
The standard clearly under Turner incorporates the notion of neutrality, and it also incorporates the notion that there can't be an exaggerated response. If I could just turn to the issue of falsehoods that Judge Bauer was pursuing.
I don't think that's correct. It talks about relevant considerations, not in your terms. Impact on the guards and so on, allocation of prison resources, perfectly reasonable. But this is the standard. It seems to me what you have to do, what we have to do, apply the standard to the facts.
What were you going to say about my...
Thank you, Your Honor. I just wanted to turn to the issue of falsehoods, the line of questioning that you were pursuing. And I wanted to point out that the single statement that the Wisconsin's identified as being false in the first article, that there were no schools, no jobs at WSPF, that was actually supported in the record. I would direct the court to an affidavit. It's docket number 48 in the district court record that showed that at the time, in March 07, there were no jobs. There was no schooling offered to transferees. That, if that has changed, that happened later. And the state's response to that with affidavits only speaks in the present tense in 2009. So there really isn't a dispute in the record that that was an accurate statement. And I think the ability to merely label something as false and thereby allow it to be censored is deeply problematic.
False. What would be the constitutional significance of that?
It's only significant, Your Honor, if the statement.
Answer my question. Suppose that it was false, that it really was false, that they didn't have schooling and jobs and so on. Would that justify the suppression of the article?
If it creates a risk
I'm asking a question, right? They find, and we'll say correctly, that this was a lie, that there were jobs and there were schooling and so on. Now, would that then justify the suppression of the article or not?
Yes, Your Honor. If in the judgment of the prison officials,
I don't know why the ifs come in. Would it justify them in doing that?
that if the prisons were able to prove that it was a lie, they have destroyed the credibility of the speaker for that and other issues as well?
They
could welcome a lie so they could tear it apart and show that he's not only a liar, but he's mistaken altogether.
They certainly have the ability to communicate with the captive audience.
And Judge Bauer is suggesting, well, they don't have to suppress it. They can answer it with their own internal newspaper. But I'm just interested in whether you think that, while that would certainly be one way of dealing with the problem, whether they could also suppress it.
Well, assuming that it is indeed...
Why do you keep saying that? I gave you all the facts. It's a demonstrable, conceited lie that there's no school. Now, just take that as a hypothetical case.
Yes, Your Honor.
If that is proved, then can it be suppressed?
Accepting that, Your Honor, yes.
Okay, thank
yes.
you. anything more? But go ahead. Yeah, you can have more time if you want.
So I think the critically important thing here is that Turner, while it does permit some deference, it is not a toothless standard. The court made that very clear in the Thornburg case. And as we've argued, it's clear here that the DOC's censorship is not neutral. And based on the review of the affidavit submitted, there is clearly here an exaggerated response to any legitimate.
I don't understand by neutrality.
Well, Your Honor, the material is being censored not solely because of a concern for security or rehabilitation, but because of the content of the speech. And that's what Judge Crabb was concerned about.
And it's relevant, as in our case about the lie, right?
Well,
that would be content-specific censorship.
The content can certainly be relevant, but the importance of neutrality is... Supreme Court explained
in neutrality. They have to treat the prisoners exactly the same as the prison authorities.
No, it's that the viewpoint discrimination has to be aimed at serving the interest in security and rehabilitation.
In the case of these, I mean, you admitted with this lie, right, that this would disserve their purposes.
A lie that negatively threatens rehabilitation and security would be a proper basis for censorship, but that we don't have that here. First of all, there are no...
Okay, well, you've argued that.
Okay.
Do you have a fresh point?
In closing, I would just say, Your Honor, that the discretion that's being claimed here is incredibly broad discretion, and it's particularly problematic because what's being censored here is not something that may be at the margins of the First Amendment, but it is speech that the prison officials have a direct interest in trying to stamp out. That is criticism of their own conduct.
Okay. Well, thank you very much, Mr. Wilkins. And you handled this on a pro bono basis, so we thank you for your efforts on behalf of your clients. And we thank Ms. Peacock.